And greetings, welcome to The Dividing Line. I'm flying deaf today. I can't hear anything, so I start talking really loud, or at least I feel like I'm talking really loud. We'll get it fixed eventually, but it's his fault. He stole parts. I think it's for something else. I have a feeling it's for something else, and he stole parts, and then forgot to put it back together again, and so I can't hear anything, and which means I can't play anything either, so I'm going to have to do other stuff. So we're just going to have to sort of woo around a little bit here today, and we'll extract our pound of flesh from the person who took everything apart at a later point in time. Anyway, a couple things that I haven't gotten to recently. I've got so much stuff, and there's just so many different topics. Ugh. That it's hard to keep up with everything. But one thing I mentioned just very briefly, and I guess it sort of flows with everything else, I was just having a Twitter conversation with a strange atheist that, here, I'll be blocking here in a second anyways. you know, because they can't keep up with stuff for a very long period of time before they start getting rather nasty. But anyways, I dared Vicky Beeching post something on Twitter, and I responded to it. There was just such a constant drumbeat now of the church owes the gay community an apology and all the rest of this, all coming from these people who, none of them of which are theologians, none of which take the Bible seriously. None of them are involved in serious gospel outreach, defense of the faith, anything like that. But we owe them an apology, even though I completely deny there is such thing as a community. I mean, just think about what LGBT means. Just think about all the variations within that. You can't build a community on that. I mean, that's a community based upon just general sexual deviation from the norm. That's all it is. I mean, that's just, I can't even begin to understand that. But...
Put your ears on.
Yep. There we go. Well, you know, I get the distinct feeling that we will not be skeletonizing our stuff for other things in the future. I just sort of guess on my part. Anyway, Vicky Beeching actually responded to me. And I was able to reply by pointing out rather clearly that this is basic fundamental biblical teaching. They want to say that well, we don't know. No, very clear. Jesus taught very clearly. You're telling us to abandon Jesus' teaching. Well, what does all that have to do with it? Well, Dr. Mueller, over the past few days, has been really talking a lot about, and it's fascinating, the establishment of human autonomy as the ultimate moral arbiter in Western culture. If you haven't been listening to the briefing, I would highly recommend that you catch up with it. He's talking about, you know, the death cult. I mean, it's the only way to put it, in the Netherlands. I mean, people pushing, you know, they've brought it down to age 12. Age 12, that you can kill yourself, and there are people saying there's clearly 11-year-old 9 months that are capable of making this. They want to push it lower. They want 10-year-old kids to be able to off themselves. And I mean, it's the death cult. It is just so the we are seeing now. You know, we've got generation after generation after generation. Now we have full secularism in those European nations. And what's the result? Zero view of the value of human life. It's all autonomy. It's all me. Everything's about me. I don't have to worry about family. I don't have to get married. I don't have to have kids. It's about my 401k. And it's just all about me. Well, I know they don't have 401ks in Europe. Same, whatever they have, that's the same thing. Human autonomy. And that human autonomy, of course, is directly connected in with what? With this gender confusion. It's not gender confusion. It is, we need to understand what it really is. It is a direct knowing rebellion against God. God made me this way. I don't feel like that. Therefore, I'm going to go a different direction. It can be all sorts of things that trigger it, all the rest of that kind of stuff, but it needs to be understood for what it is. It's a rebellion against God. Have there been people who felt like this down through history? Of course. And what were they told? You're rebelling against God. Stop it. They had a reason to do the right thing. Now it's, well, you know, if you feel that way. And so about 2 weeks ago, right at 2 weeks ago, military approves hormone therapy for, and then of course, you always know when you're dealing with the media, because they are right behind it. They refer to this man as Chelsea Manning. His name is Bradley Manning, Sergeant Bradley Manning, a convicted traitor who revealed secrets, is currently in prison, and amazingly, the United States Armed Forces, which has no money for anything these days anyways, is going to spend money to give this prisoner hormone therapy to transition to female. And of course, we all know that's a lie. You don't transition. All you do is mutilate the body. Increased chances of cancer, suicide. It's a lie. It is a lie from hell. But it's now the big lie that you can tell. And it's a good thing to tell it in our society. And our tax money, you know, you're doing your taxes. Just think, some of that money you're sending is going to go to help a prisoner transition. The level of abject moral stupidity is difficult to even begin to understand. Really is difficult to begin to understand. So, right along the same time period, right, same subject, I'm going to have to weave these together somehow. This is going to be tough, because I've got a lot of stuff sitting here that has just been brewing. And if I leave it too long, then it's so old that it's no longer relevant anymore, so I got to get to it eventually. I've got three different sound files over here, stuff that I've started or haven't finished. And anyways, then we had something really interesting take place. This comes from freethoughtblogs.com, which is Richard Carrier's blog. And most people have at least heard of Richard Carrier. He's an atheist. He's done a number of debates. I'm pretty certain that we've reviewed at least one debate that he's done, probably with William Lane Craig or somebody, at some time in the past. It was long before we were doing video. And not too long ago now, this would be February 19th, so what, a week ago? Richard Carrier came out and demonstrated that theology matters. He's getting divorced, and it's always sad to hear about a divorce, but it's much worse to hear about divorce when it's connected with this kind of cowardly, anti-ethical excuse-making. He's coming out, he says, as poly. He's poly. Yeah. That's polyamorous, for those of you who don't know what all the... And I wish I didn't have to figure out what all this stuff, and I don't know all of them. You can only take so much before you start getting ill. So now he's coming out poly. What does that mean? Well, that's the same thing that basically in the past, you would say to a man who couldn't keep his pants zipped. But now it's a orientation, see. And see, now since we're all autonomous, we create our own reality. There is no objective reality. There is no God. There is no creation. There's no male. There's no female. There's no right. There's no wrong. Since man, you define your own system. It's all up in the air now. We've thrown off all restraints. Then you just go, well, you know what? I cheated on my wife. But you know what? I didn't cheat. I'm poly. It's what I am. You should feel good for me that I'm brave enough to say now that I'm poly. Demonstrating again that the theology matters. And when you are someone like Richard Carrier, you don't have any basis for really constructing any meaningful moral or ethical system, which, you know, we had already been saying to him for a long time, but now he's just made it very, very clear. So, yeah, he came out as quote-unquote poly. Then we've got this one. I do not know how to say this guy's name. This has got to be... Okay. U-J-J-A-L, next word, D-O-S-A-N-J-H. Look, I make some good stabs at stuff, but Ujjal Dasanja? Who knows? This is up in Canada. Man, Canada is just going nuts. You know, they've just now discovered the right to self-suicide and all the rest of this stuff, and the brakes are off. I mean, man, I'm going to tell you something. Anyways, he calls for certification of places of worship. Former British Columbia Premier and Federal Cabinet Minister Ujjal Dasanja wants a national licensing scheme for all places of worship and private schools in Canada to ensure they don't undermine Canadian values. We want to know what it is that's being taught, Dasanja told the Senate National Security Committee Monday. If we believe that's not in consonance with the need to build a caring and ready, folks, inclusive society, a fair society, then we can simply make the law that we won't give them funds or charitable status. Let's starve them out. Now, he may not even be referring primarily to Christians. He says later on, we do not only have an obligation, but we have a right to demand that we don't teach killing for being offended or something as silly as that, said Dasanja, who was attacked and seriously injured for speaking out against Sikh extremism after the 1985 Air India bombing. Dasanja's testimony echoed the laws of Ottawa resident Michelle Walrond, whose son, Lukman Abdunur, was arrested in late 2014 as part of a national security investigation. She told the same committee in December she wants federal certification for religious preachers. In Canada, anyone can call themselves an imam, she said, and there's nobody else that's around that has the ability in the Muslim community to say that's not right. So now you want the state to take care of that. There you go. Well, you know, some people would like to say, oh, yeah, we got to control those imams. Remember, folks, remember, they may start with the Muslims. They'll be coming after you before long. They'll be coming after you before long. Just remember, every time you... and did you know that on February 21st, U.S. Secretary of State John... I served in Vietnam, Kerry, speaks during a media appearance and says, in a groundbreaking move, the United States on Monday appointed the first U.S. special envoy. Now think about it. We've got Syria. We've got Iran. We've got ISIS, Boko Haram. We've got China building islands in the ocean for military purposes. We've got all this stuff going on in the world. And what's the Obama administration most concerned about, other than those of you freezing to death in the East Coast, global warming? Appointed the first U.S. special envoy for gay and lesbian rights in a bid to help eradicate discrimination around the world. Aren't you glad to know that your tax dollars are not only helping prisoners in Leavenworth or wherever it is he is transition, but now they're being used for a special envoy for gay and lesbian rights? Makes me want to pay my taxes. Defending and promoting the human rights of LGBT persons is at the core of our commitment to advancing human rights globally, the heart and conscience of our diplomacy, U.S. Secretary of State John, I served in Vietnam, Kerry said. He named Randy Barry, the current Consul General in Amsterdam, as the new envoy, saying he believed Barry would significantly advance efforts underway to move towards a world free from violence and discrimination against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. Won't be long till you throw in there, I wonder what terms they're going to use. I just think they're going to put a 3 after the T. Because you'll have transgendered, transgenerational, and trans species. What do you think? Because all you'd have to do is put a little superscript 3 after the T, and now you've covered them all. I think that's what they're going to do. What do you think?
Maybe they have to go to footnotes.
No, but you got to keep it short.
Definitions at the bottom.
You got to keep it short. You know, it's got for this, especially for our society now, has to be very, very short. And then we have this year old story. I think this is from 131 of last year, even though I only saw it a few days ago. Rosaria Butterfield. I mentioned Rosaria Butterfield. Oh, I don't know, a year-ish ago, somewhere around there. I had read her book, The Secret Thoughts of an Unlikely Convert. She was as left-wing, liberal, lesbian as you can get. And she was converted to Christ and got married and kids and homeschooling. And we're talking... And it was a really great book. I listened to it on... I can remember exactly where I was. I did the loop around Troon out in East Valley. Beautiful ride. I was laughing. There's so many times, because there are times it's just hilarious. She's a very good writer. And what I did not know was that when she was asked to speak, not at UCLA, not at some wacko Ivy League school that is just completely controlled by leftist commies. She was asked to speak at Wheaton. Wheaton. You figure that's pretty easy. Students from the student body protested Rosaria Butterfield's testimony at Wheaton, saying that, you know, that's not the only way. See, that's not the only way. And that's exactly what Vicky Beeching was saying. was, you know, whether we're heterosexual or homosexual, Jesus just loves us all the same. And that just sounds so wonderful. Until you put something else in there. And then realize, wait a minute, that's not so wonderful. But that's what they're saying. And what was the... here. The students who demonstrated said that it was wrong for the university to give the impression that Butterfield's story was the only valid story. According to the demonstrators, there are gay people who follow Christ who see no need to repent of same-sex behavior. Their stories are just as valid as Butterfield's, and Butterfield's story of repentance from sin should not be held out as the norm on Wheaton's campus. Why not? It's a Christian school. Again, this younger generation has been taught we are autonomous. We get to define our own reality. And if we go to your school, you're just so lucky to have us that you just better adopt whatever we tell you to adopt. Wow. I couldn't believe it. It was amazing. And of course it goes, if you want to see people who have just completely bought into a deceptive, contradictory, incoherent worldview, the members of the quote-unquote gay community, whatever that is, and I don't think it exists, there was... Tell by the name of Justin Massey. Rationalizing injustice, how we defend acts against minority people. It is pressing we start listening to the valid pain of minorities in our community and begin empowering the beloved of God rather than defending the actions of those who wrong them. See, it's all... You don't start with objective, ethical, and moral principles. You start with goo. Emotional goo. And if that's your foundation, guess what? You're never going to really build much beyond that. But they're not trying to build anything beyond that. As long as you're stuck in emotional goo, that's good enough. Yesterday morning, the students of Wheaton College gathered together, eager to present candid questions to the college president at the annual town hall chapel. Students approached the standing microphones. Some asked light, comical questions, and some engaging more controversial, serious matters. The student body showed great respect, occasionally applauding as these students spoke. However, there was no applause for one student who spoke against the injustice he has witnessed his LGBT peers experience. A brother in Christ, an ally to the LGBT community, he boldly questioned the oppression and exclusion that has harmed a demographic we should be embracing and loving. Instead of being greeted by support, he faced mostly silence before an apple was thrown at him by a peer in the crowd. No matter why this individual decided to throw the apple, it was more than simply disruptive, it was hurtful. For some of us in Wheaton's LGBT community, it felt as if this student was spitting in our face as this ally voiced the deep pain we experience day to day. Now, these folks... Really, this just resonates with them. They think that's just awesome writing. But if you just sat back for just a moment and listened to what's being said, it's gobbledygook. It has no meaning. It's like saying blue is the scent of January. What? Doesn't have any meaning. You're assuming so many things. I mean, the number of presuppositions, unfounded assumptions, and simple platitudes. They're piled on top of each other here. There is no community. Why can't you grow up and recognize that there are people who will misbehave in every community? How come it is that's representative of oppression against a community, but what you see in gay pride marches is not representative of the LGBT community? Can you explain the consistency there? No, you can't, because there is none. Throwing an apple at anybody for anything is stupid. But it is childish to then take that and go, oh, that's just like spitting at all of us. Grow up. I have never seen a movement so immature emotionally than this movement. And so many people are just so afraid of offending. Oh, we can't offend. How about dealing with the issue? How about dealing with the fact that you're telling this college, which has had the same stance all along, they need to change because of your sexual desires? Let's be honest about it. You went there knowing what it is, and now you want change because of your sexual desires, which you may not have 5 years from now, but they need to change. Oh, yeah. There you go. That's what we're up against, folks. That is what we are up against. Then I wanted to get to this one, because I mentioned this one, and I didn't get to it. Switching gears completely here. I mentioned this briefly, I think a week ago. It might have been Tuesday. I think it was a week ago. Anyway. Most people would not have caught this, but I sure did. Because I remember the first time we drove past the sign along the side of the road that said, "Welcome to Utah." And I felt like I was going on foreign missions work, and I was. Because, man, especially some of those little towns in southern Utah. Yeah! I mean, you know, I'm not talking just about Arizona City and stuff like that, though that would be. But southern Utah is, oh yeah, Panguitch, Utah, and places down there, and Kanab, and of course, once me and remember Bill Boyd, we went out to and saw the Mountain Meadows Massacre site. That's creepy, you know, when you think about it. That's where that happened. But anyway, Utah is an interesting place. And back in the 80s, one of the stories that I would tell when I would speak on Mormonism was that of all the 50 states, there was only one state that still had the firing squad as a possible option for execution, and it was the state of Utah. And the reason for that was the Mormon doctrine of blood atonement. There are certain grievous sins that you can commit which the blood of Jesus Christ will not atone for. Your own blood must be shed to atone for those sins. Now, evidently, at some point, 90s or early this century, that changed. I hadn't either until I saw this article. And here it says, January 27th, 2015, Randy Gardner of Salt Lake City, the older brother of Ronnie Lee Gardner, the last inmate to be killed by firing squad in Utah in 2010. Okay, so this happened recently. Protests with a group opposed to capital punishment plans. A hotly contested proposal that resurrects Utah's use of firing squads to carry out executions narrowly passed a key vote Friday in the state's legislature after three missing lawmakers were summoned to break a tie vote. The Republican-controlled House of Representatives voted 39-34 Friday morning to approve the measure, sending it to an uncertain fate in the state's GOP-controlled Senate. Leaders in that chamber have thus far declined to say if they'll support it, and Utah's Republican government Gary Herbert won't say if he'll sign it. Senate President Wayne Niederhauser, a Republican from Sandy, again declined to tell reporters on Friday if he'd support it. Let me see here. Here, down below. During that time, Riverton Republican member Dan McKay switched to vote in favor, allowed the measure to pass 39-34. When asked later by the Associated Press about the switch, McKay smiled and walked away without comment. Ray argues that a team of trained marksmen is faster and more humane than the drawn-out deaths that have occurred in botched lethal objections. Well, there's a point there. His bill would call for a firing squad if Utah cannot get lethal injection drugs 30 days before an execution. Critics say the firing squad is a gruesome relic of Utah's Wild West past and would bring international condemnation upon the state. That criticism and excessive media attention was one of the reasons many lawmakers voted in 2004 to stop allowing condemned persons to choose death by firing squad. Well, I guess... Okay, so I guess that's when the change was. This guy had chosen firing squad before that if he died in 2010. So that's interesting. Oh, here it is. Next line. Duh. A handful of inmates on Utah's death row were sentenced before the law changed and still have the option of going before a firing squad in a few years once they've exhausted any appeals. It was last used in 2010 when Ronnie Lee Gardner was executed by five police officers with 30 caliber Winchester rifles. Now, funny thing is, let me finish skinning down here. Yeah. Doesn't say anything about it. That ain't why Utah had the firing squad. They don't want to talk about why Utah had the firing squad. And the people in the legislature don't want to talk about why Utah had the firing squad and why they still want to have the firing squad. There is a much more obvious reason for this, and it's Mormonism. And Mormonism is still the majority religion in the state of Utah. And Mormonism still has a theology. Now, that theology is getting diluted, and I said diluted, not diluted. It's always been diluted, but it's being diluted. And good old Mormons in the south of Utah know that there are certain sins you can commit that if you're put to death by lethal injection, you're going to hell because you didn't shed blood. You do generally bleed when shot multiple times at the same time. Fairly profuse bleeding, at least briefly, until your heart stops. So that's what it's all about. But nobody will even talk about it. It's just like, you know, I don't know who this reporter is. Fox News, what do you expect? But Fox News doesn't get it, and they didn't bring it up. They didn't bring it up at all. So, but there you go. There's what's going on in Utah. We will see what will come of that. I do want to talk about this one. I mentioned last time, and I brought some stuff up, and I can get through it faster than anything else. Let's see here. Good. I'm just about to talk about this. John Sorensen is a Romanist on Twitter. While I was talking about these other things, he says, save $7 on the book that James White doesn't want you to read. I'm going to be talking about it. And it is Tim Staples' book, Behold Your Mother, on yet another failed attempt to defend Rome's unbiblical, ahistorical doctrines on Mary. But it's funny. I'm glad John Sorensen said this. Somebody in channel, look up at @J_Sorensen, Sorensen, and tweet to him that I'm talking about him right now on Twitter, on the dividing line, so he can tune if he'd like to. Because I did want to talk a little bit about a brief exchange we had today. Brother Hayes pointed out something on his blog this morning, and I'm going to go ahead and close this and find that. It was a very interesting blog, just mentioned in passing, and I've always thought if we had more time, there would be some real value in doing this. There's so much stuff out there published by Rome and published by Roman Catholic scholarship that is directly opposed to the foundations that the modern Roman Catholic Church built on. For example, I've mentioned many times the papacy as an organization. The foundations that built it up, history has washed away. The outrageous claims made for the See of Rome that allowed it to become the center of the Western Church and have all this alleged authority over everybody else and control everybody else. We know about the pseudo-Isidorian decretals. We know about the donation of Constantine. These were frauds that many of the people in the medieval period where this was really building up and becoming founded, they were reading citations from early church fathers that we know today were completely fraudulent. Completely fraudulent. And history has washed that stuff away, and yet the papacy, without a foundation, hangs there in midair. And when you look at Roman Catholic scholarship today and compare it to Roman Catholic apologetics, there is a huge gap in between, so that the one cannot go to the other. I'll let them figure out who's in the flames and who's in Abraham's bosom, but anyways, there is a gulf fixed between the two. And yeah, someone just said in channel, I need a Star Trek computer. Computer, tweet the Klingons. And that would sort of fit. They sort of would be the Klingons. Anyway, this morning Steve Hayes linked, and he real brief question. He said, how come Catholic apologists give us one interpretation of Revelation chapter 12, the woman in Revelation chapter 12, but they don't follow their bishops? They don't follow their bishops. You know, they tell us, you know, it's like Devin Rose tells us, well, we know because we have apostolic succession and we've got the bishops and we've got the church and we can trace things back. Well, right online, you can get this at usccb.org, United States Conference of Catholic Bishops.org. Go to Bible and you can get their Bible, and their Bible has notes. Ooh, yeah, notes. And so all Steve did was he just went and looked at what they said about Revelation chapter 12, because Revelation chapter 12, you got the woman, you know, 12 stars, gives birth, etc., etc. The early church saw this as the people of God, connected with Israel. But obviously today, Rome's doctrine of Mary has become so huge, and it's based upon this teeny, tiny corpus of texts. You have to turn Cacarita Mene into this massive platform for all of this huge amount of theology. Well, so you gotta find anything, and you gotta find Mary in Revelation chapter 12, or you can't even begin to point to anything that would be relevant to the bodily assumption of Mary. So you gotta go there. But he pointed out, well, you know, when you actually go and read what the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, I mean, aren't these the people that the apologists are supposed to be following? You know? What do they say about this? Well, interesting. Let me just read here. This central section of Revelation portrays the power of evil represented by a dragon in opposition to God and his people. First, the dragon pursues the woman about to give birth, but her son is saved and caught up to God and his throne. Then Michael and his angels cast the dragon and the angels out of heaven. After this, the dragon tries to attack the boy indirectly by attacking members of his church. A beast, symbolizing the Roman Empire, then becomes the dragon's agent, mortally wounded but restored to life and worshipped by all the world. A second beast arises in the land, symbolizing the Antichrist, which leads people astray by its prodigies to idolize the first beast. This is followed by a vision of the Lamb and his faithful ones and the proclamation of imminent judgment upon the world in terms of the wine of God's wrath. The woman adorned with the sun, the moon, and the stars, images taken from Genesis 37:9-10, symbolizes God's people in the Old and New Testament. The Israel of old gave birth to the Messiah and then became the new Israel, the church, which suffers persecution by the dragon. This corresponds to a widespread myth throughout the ancient world that a goddess pregnant with a savior was pursued by a horrible monster. By miraculous intervention, she bore a son who then killed the monster. There's the bishops. Did you hear Mary in there? I didn't. So this John Sorensen fellow, I posted something about that, and he's like, seriously? The USCCB has the NAB on its site, and that somehow precludes any other Catholic understanding of the text? The interpretation footnote is proper. It's just not the only one. I love this. I remember, I don't know why I was there, but I was driving around in Pasadena, California once. And I was listening to Tim Staples on Catholic Answers Live. And, well, it may have been another program now I think about it. I don't know. It may have been. Anyways, he was asked a question about Matthew chapter 16. Now, remember, I've heard in his earlier days, Tim, I remember I had a cassette tape. That's how long ago this was. Cassette tape. I was listening to this in a Walkman in a cassette tape riding my bike in the 1990s. Okay. But on that cassette tape, he said that every church father, that the testimony of the early church was unanimous as to the interpretation of Matthew chapter 16 in regards to Peter. Now, I knew that was absolutely bogus, but that's what he said back then. I don't think he'd say that now because he knows better. But I've never heard him say, yeah, you know, I used to tell people some really stupid stuff. I haven't heard that either. Anyway, he was asked a question about this. And it was like, well, you know, someone pointed out that certain popes had said certain things and Augustus said, well, you need to understand the polyvalent nature of Scripture. And that there are many possible understandings of any one given text. So, when you're creating your dogma out of whole cloth, just making it up out of anything. When you read his book, the book that John Sorensen says, I don't want you to read. You go, wow, are you engaging in special pleading? And man, your exegesis is horrific. It's horrible. But what you don't get is this. What you don't get is, well, you know, our bishops here in the United States are able to, interpret the whole text and never say a word about the woman. But we apologists see something more. So I think it was a perfectly fair question to ask, you know, how could Tim Staples write an entire section on Revelation chapter 12 and come to the conclusion, this is Mary. But the people who are his superiors, he's not a cleric, he's not ordained, he has no special standing in the church. I know, according to Catholic Answers, he is one of the foremost Catholic scholars in the world. That's what they said. That's what the advertisement said. But still, when it comes to apostolic succession, he's not even ordained. So I wonder why you wouldn't start with what the bishops say and then say, and while that's the main understanding, you know, it's possible. Yeah, I know why. It's because it doesn't work. I know. I'm being facetious. But anyway, I mentioned a article that I wanted to look at real quick. 10 things Catholics are tired of hearing. Number one, Catholics worship statues. This stereotype is painful to hear. Not only is it completely false, but it is ludicrous. despite the fact that there are 801 million Protestants worldwide, according to the Pew Research Center, my rant will be geared towards our brothers and sisters in the United States. In this country, approximately 51.5% of people are Protestant Christians. I'm sorry. Realistically, most of these families have pictures in their home, which is completely normal, right? Right. They have pictures of their loved ones, both living and deceased. It is not hypocritical then to say that Catholics... Is it not hypocritical then to say that Catholics are idol worshippers when these families have portraits of their loved ones on the walls? If these Protestant families can have pictures of Uncle Bernie and Mama hang on the wall, then most certainly the church can present pictures of our beloved Jesus, his disciples, and the saints. Now, that is just so shallow and such a shift of the reality that it's dishonest. It's simply dishonest. If we Protestants were bowing down in front of pictures of Uncle Bernie and Mama, lighting candles, fingering rosaries, rocking back and forth and praying to them, then you'd have a parallel. But there is no parallel here. Because you know, whoever authored this, it doesn't have a name. That's a shame. So whoever at Catholic 365 authored this, you know that that's not what you're doing. And it goes to the second one. Number two, Catholics pray to Mary instead of God. Well, of course, it's not instead of God. But this is a very common misconception throughout the Protestant community, and while I can understand why it is, I'm also disheartened that many jump to such a harsh conclusion of the Catholic faith. We don't pray to Mary. We ask her to pray for us, just as a Protestant asks their deceased grandparent or parent to watch over them. Oh, yeah. I just found this... As one who has engaged in formal debates with Catholic apologists on these issues, I just found this to be massively dishonest. I mean, it's just... So, I walked into my office, because I was going to talk about this earlier and didn't get to it last program, or the program before, I don't remember. And I grabbed this. This is The Glories of Mary by Saint Alphonsus de Liguori. This book has gone through over 800 editions. Liguori is a doctor of the church. It has the Nihil Obstat in the Imprimatur, which no one cares about anymore today anyways, but it does. Mine's an old copy. Look how you probably, yeah, you can tell. I can tell on the screen, at least what they're seeing, what I'm seeing. It's pretty yellowed pages. And do jazz hands again? What's jazz hands? You don't know what jazz hands are? Okay. Anyway, what I did, honestly, is I said, I'm gonna do the random page thing. Okay, I'm going to do the random page thing. And I just opened it up. And I put a marker in it. And I opened it up. You know, a decade ago, I didn't really have to do this. But I do now. My arms were longer back then, obviously. I opened it up just randomly to page 300. And 25 of this edition of The Glories of Mary. Doctor of the Church. Alphonsus de Liguori. Oh, thank you. A Hollywood Christian says it's Elizabeth Giddens wrote this. Well, Elizabeth, shame on you. Here's what we read on page 325. Compare this with Elizabeth Giddens, according to Twitter. The second argument by which it is proved that Mary was more holy in the first moment of her existence than all the saints together is found on the great office of Mediatress of Men, with which she was charged from the beginning, and which made it necessary that she should possess a greater treasure of grace from the beginning than all other men together. It is well known With what unanimity theologians and holy fathers give Mary this title of mediatress, on account of her having obtained salvation for all. By her powerful intercession and her merit of congruity, thereby procuring the great benefit of redemption for the lost world. I say by her merit of congruity, for Jesus Christ alone is our mediator by way of justice and by merit, condign merit, de condigno, as the scholastics say. He having offered his merits to the eternal Father, who accepted them for our salvation. Mary, on the other hand, is a mediatress of grace, by way of simple intercession and merit of congruity. She having offered to God, as theologians say with St. Bonaventure, her merits for the salvation of all men. And God, as a favor, accepted them with the merits of Jesus Christ. On this account, Arnold of Chartres says that she effected our salvation in common with Christ. And Richard of St. Victor says that Mary desired, sought, and obtained the salvation of all, nay, even she effected the salvation of all. So that everything good and every gift in order of grace, which each of the saints received from God, Mary obtained for them. Random selection, randomly chosen from the Glories of Mary by Saint Alphonsus de Liguori. That is pagan blasphemy. It is not Christian. It never could be Christian. And Alphonsus de Liguori is not in heaven. Well, I suppose he could have repented, but there's no evidence that he did. If that's what he died believing, he died in false hope, with a false gospel, without ever having known the gospel of Jesus Christ. If you're afraid of Jesus and need Mary to effect your salvation, you don't understand the gospel, my friend. Okay? So, this is sort of a lighthearted article with lighthearted answers, but they're dishonest and they're missing the real point. Catholics do pray to Mary because they fear God. Liguori says it over and over again. Not in that particular section, but throughout the book. Throughout the book. Like I said, just grabbed it, opened it up. I knew wherever I turned, my stomach would be turned by what I read. Because there's just nothing. There's not a page in that book that does not contain some kind of disgusting blasphemy. And there you have it. Number three. The saints can't hear your prayers because they are dead. I beg to differ. Since when is anyone who is in heaven considered dead? We call it the afterlife for a reason. In fact, there is biblical proof that saints can hear our prayers. Revelation 5:8. And when he had taken it, the four living creatures and 24 elders fell down before the Lamb. Each one had a harp, and they were holding golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of God's people. By the way, as we pointed out when we went through very, very carefully my debate with Patrick Madrid years ago on this particular subject, that in no way, shape, or form substantiates that belief at all. It doesn't say that these saints, it doesn't even say, you know, the four living creatures, 24 elders. How do you know they're saints? A. B. How do you know that they heard these prayers? C. How do you know they were addressed to these creatures, these beings? The prayers, the saints, are to God. Holding the bowls in them does not mean that they heard them. Gross misuse. Revelation 8, 3-4, another angel who had a golden censer came and stood at the altar. He was given much incense to offer with the prayers of all God's people on the golden altar in front of the throne. The smoke of the incense together with the prayers of God's people went up before God from the angel's hand. Again, nothing to do with those who have passed on engaging in any type of communication, including hearing prayers from people on earth. Total exegetical failure on Rome's part at that point. And once again, our author skips the real issue, and that is that prayer is an act of worship. You pray to what you worship. And if you pray to saints, then you're worshiping saints. That's why Rome has developed its latria, dulia, hyperdulia distinctions, all of which are grossly unbiblical and have no biblical foundation, but in fact, the Bible contradicts those alleged things. Are you going to touch on the Shubat stuff? So something new? Have they come up with some new wackiness? There was something, now that I think about it. What was it? I hadn't planned on it. Sorry. I can't keep track of the... need to get that fixed. I can't keep track of the weird stuff that's coming out of Waleed and Theodore Shubat these days. So I'm not sure what new thing there is that I'm supposed to be looking at. So I'm sorry, James the Conqueror. I mean, I know they're calling for jihad against Muslims and all the rest of this wild and crazy stuff, and presenting Roman Catholicism and all the rest of this stuff, though I can't imagine any official Roman Catholic would ever support their kind of odd stuff. So I don't know what there is. I just scanned through the stuff there. And anyways, first thing is the humorous reality that the notorious ISIS beheader revealed as wealthy college grad with plenty of job opportunities. So it is, you can't help but mock the idea that the way to defeat ISIS is to start job fairs somewhere. That's true. Anyways, sorry, I got distracted there. I thought maybe there might be something, because I had read something, but I don't remember the specifics of what it was. But there's just so much coming out of there. I hope everybody understands. The Shubats, way out there in Nana land. Can't trust anything they've got to say. So they've totally left anything that's even semi-related to Orthodoxy. Now spun out into the outer reaches of the universe there. And I guess that's all the time we've got. So I will continue on. I didn't even get to Mother Mary isn't important. She's just like anyone else. I didn't even get there. Even though what I just read from Ligurti was more than enough to refute that too. But we will continue on, Lord willing, next week. If I survive my half marathon race this weekend, I'll be doing my first formal half marathon running race this weekend. So if I'm hobbled next Tuesday, you'll know why, but hopefully that won't be the case. And anyways, we'll see you next Tuesday. Thanks for watching. God bless.